Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Royal Oak, Michigan. At age 17, he was an anti-Christian, fervent atheist. He then earned a bachelor's degree in English from Oakland University, and on April 27, 2007, he surrendered his life to Christ. From 2013 to 2018, he was a minister at Oakland University. Since 2018, he's been the co-founder of Zira, and since 2025, he's been a campus minister at Rochester Christian University. A modern-day Saul of Tarsus. His name? Cameron Underdown. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Cameron Underdown, a modern-day Saul of Tarsus. Cameron, welcome, an honor to have you.
That's my pleasure, Jack. So honored to be here and grateful to be able to share with you today and talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about.
Please lead us in an opening prayer.
Would love to. Dear Jesus, just so grateful for you, for your mercy, for who you are, for being willing to work and to see and to forgive people like me and many others who have felt like we were outside the power and the mercy that you could provide. And so, Jesus, for anyone listening today who thinks they're too far away from you, I hope that they can know by the end that there is no such thing. We love you and we praise you and we thank you. Amen.
Thanks, Cam. Let's go back. Growing up Royal Oak, your childhood, your mom and your dad, please.
Yes, so I did. I grew up in Royal Oak. It was honestly a great space, a great neighborhood, but my mom and my dad, two really brilliant and wonderful people in their own regards, yet I have to say there were some challenges. My mom was art teacher at the College for Creative Studies for many, many years. Right down the street. I spent a lot of my formative youth there. Even took a few classes there myself. So shout out to CCS as well. And my dad, he worked in software sales, still does. Genial, loved being out in the community. And yet, in our home, I would say that faith was not a priority. And there were some other things going on, too. Unfortunately, my mom had gotten into a really terrible car accident when I was about 4 or 5 years old. My dad was trying to start a new business, and their marriage was under strain. God was not really a part of our household. And as a result, for me, some of my earliest memories were about trying to solve this puzzle of the difficulty in my home and some of the difficult aspects of what was going on a day-to-day basis.
All right, you go to Shrine at 12 Mile and Woodward for
yes.
grade school, then high school. You're 15 years old, so you've been at Shrine for 9-10 years. What was your reputation at that point?
Well, let me take you back even to how I got to Shrine, because that was an interesting story in and of itself. My mother was not too keen on the kindergarten teacher at the elementary school down the street that my older sister had gone to. And she decided to send me to Shrine just for kindergarten, right? Maybe had some issues with the church as a whole, but it'll be enough to get him into first grade. I took to the school like a fish to water, really. And I think it was partially the structure, the discipline, different aspects of what was going on there I enjoyed. And so for those first 10 years at Shrine, I was thought of as a scholar. I was thought of in a high regard spiritually. I would read at the masses that they would have for students, even to the point where in the third grade, I don't know if it was a teacher or someone from the rectory called my parents and said, "You need to prepare your son for the priesthood." To which my parents, I will say respectfully, declined on the phone. and came off that phone and said, "This is the most preposterous thing we've ever heard." My paraphrase, not their words exactly, but take, you know, fast forward to high school. Their marriage, they divorced when I was in eighth grade, so you know, right before freshman year. And the only way for me to go to Shrine was if there was somebody else who was going to be able to pay for it. It was just not possible for my family at the time. I wound up getting a full ride scholarship there for all 4 years. And again, highly thought of, highly regarded, you know, had my name on a plaque when you walked in the building. 15 years old, things change pretty dramatically. The biggest aspect of life that I was trying to figure out was, why did my parents' relationship end? Why did relationships end? I wanted to find a relationship that didn't end. It was a really key part of my journey at the time. So I was really interested. I mean, not to say that most 15-year-old guys are not interested in young women, but not only was I interested in dating young women, I was interested in having a really serious relationship. And I met a young lady when I was 15 who kind of met me at that level. She was interested in a serious relationship too. She just happened to be an atheist. And I was really interested in her convictions. The way that she talked, the way that she was so certain, the way that she took responsibility for herself, for her life, that everything was in our hands, nothing was in God's control, really intrigued me. And like most things I do, when I became interested, I became really interested. And then when I decided, you know what, I think this is something I want too, I turned it up to an 11. So I start my sophomore year, again, highly regarded scholar, name on a plaque when I walk in the building. By the end of sophomore year, I am preaching to everyone who will listen in my Catholic school that Jesus isn't real. The fact that you all believe in him is silly. It's false. You guys are, I mean, I had a lot of words that I won't say here on the air. But anyone that I could get to corner in the lunchroom, in the hallway, I made sure to tell them exactly what I believed and what I believed about their God, which was that he wasn't real. And as a result, they were following something that again, while being false, was maybe even dangerous for people. Whatever I could do to separate them from their faith, that's what I was interested in doing.
We're talking to Cam Underdown, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Cam Underdown today. He's a campus minister at Rochester Christian University. All right, Cam, you're 17. You're dating this 18-year-old girl. What happens?
Yes. Well, the pivot away from any of the faith that I even understood or knew took me to some dark places. And one of them was essentially leaving the girl I was with, cheating on her, finding this other young lady who was interested. And I was entering senior year. She had just finished. I thought my whole world was her, right? That's how I'd left the previous relationship. I even told that young lady, look, I think I found the person that I want to marry. And everything about who I was, my entire identity was wrapped up in this new relationship. We had thrown all caution to the wind. We'd become sexually active. And I didn't have any friends. No one could tell me anything about what was true, what was good, what was helpful. And I remember, there I am, end of my senior year, still a scholar, right? I've got a 33 ACT. I've got this 4.4 GPA. I've got admissions to any college that I've applied to. Write my ticket practically anywhere I want to go. And it was March. It was March of 2005, and I get a phone call from my girlfriend who was at college. And she said, look, I'm pregnant. We're pregnant. And that moment is emblazoned into my memory. I've never felt so unsure about anything, right? As I was sharing before, I wanted to be sure of things. That's why I started targeting this atheism. At least we can be sure there's nothing. At least all the decisions come back down to me. Now we're talking about another being. Now we're talking about something that seems so far beyond my control. I did not know what to do. And I did not want to tell anyone. I didn't want to tell my parents, so I didn't. I didn't talk to a counselor. I didn't even tell a friend. The only person, the only people that knew were this young woman and myself. And what I didn't know, essentially, was one of her parents. So we made a decision. We made a plan. What we thought would be a decent plan was to go to a clinic and see what our options were. Right? Those are the things I'd heard. Those are the things I'd known about, at least, and could look up on Google at the time. I remember calling in an orthodontist appointment, a fake one, driving away from school, picking up my girlfriend at the time, and driving to a clinic. The plan was, because I was 17, so I couldn't enter without a permission slip. She could. So the plan was she would go back, she would talk to the doctor, she would find out what our options were, and then she'd come talk to me, and then we'd make a decision. We didn't have to make a decision that day. She went in. And about 20 minutes later, I'm still sitting in the waiting room and she's not coming out. And I realize what's actually going on. And so for the next hour and a half, 2 hours, I sit in this waiting room, waiting, living and steeped in this choice, these and the consequences that are unfolding before me. She comes back out of the room. You know, she's pumped full of drugs and she's sobbing. And I remember kind of lifting her up and putting her in the backseat of the car and driving her back to her home. And now it's about sixth hour and I don't know what to do. So I just go back to school and I'm completely numb. I mean, for those who are listening, who have been through this, whether, you know, as a man or as a woman, I think at least the people I've shared with have expressed a lot of the same, right? There's this numbness, there's this sensation that there's this finality. And you can do one of two things with it. It's either, you can either try to forget about it and push it as far away from your mind as possible, or you're just kind of consumed and crushed under the weight. For me, at least from that point, it was the first. I decided we're going to try to push this aside. We're going to figure this out. We're going to be okay. She was going to Oakland University, and that's where I decided to go as well, mostly to be close to her. The relationship didn't last. You know, sometimes you go through that degree of traumatic experience, and it's hard. It's hard. It's just hard in general. It's really hard for young people, especially who didn't know. And I would meet new people, new friends, even, you know, new potential girlfriends. But the one thing I couldn't do that nobody knew was cry. I could not cry physical tears, no matter what I tried.
All right, let's jump ahead. 2 years, you haven't cried.
Mm-hmm.
It's April 27th, 2007, Cam.
Brought right back to that day. I remember I was in my house. I was in Ferndale, Michigan, right down the street. And I was alone. I had gotten to such a dark and depressive state that even my roommates at the time had broken their lease just to get away from me. And so as I sat there, the semester over at Oakland, by myself, in my room, I picked up a book that this Christian had given me. These Christians at Oakland, at least, had found out what I believed, because I made sure, just like at Shrine, that I let them know what I believed, too. And they tried to meet me. They tried to expressed to me how good God was and how good Jesus was, and I just wasn't buying it. But one of them, for my birthday, threw me a surprise party and then gave me a book called Mere Christianity. And I remember it was in my room by C.S. Lewis, and I was so hopeless that day, trying to figure out a solution to a problem I could not figure out, and just realizing I had no help at all. And so I picked up Mere Christianity, and I turned the pages, and I was reading the first maybe 10, and I put the book down and thought, this is a bunch of baloney. I know why I don't believe this. I don't need to be convinced about what this, the whole idea and the theology of Jesus is. I know what that is, and I know why I don't believe. And so arrogant me, 19, looks up to the ceiling and says, hey, God, I don't think you're real, but if you are, I could really use some help right now. I'm not stupid. If you're real, show me. What happened next, I didn't expect. Because the last thing I thought was there was actually going to be a response or an answer. But what happened was that within about 15 seconds, I had started crying physical tears, something I'd been previously unable to do, something I had tried to do by chopping onions and sniffing them or trying to hurt myself at different times. Nothing would make the tears fall. I say this one prayer that I don't even really believe in into the ceiling, and the next thing you know, I am sobbing. And I'm not sobbing just for a minute. I'm sobbing for 10, 15 minutes, and I keep crying out, Jesus, I'm sorry. I would love to say that in that moment, it was a relief. I was stunned, but I was afraid. I was afraid because this being that I had spent so much time preaching against, spent so much time denying, had now just revealed himself to me in such a powerful way. And what did that mean for my life? What was I going to do? What was I going to say to my friends and my family? My entire persona was built on the fact that God wasn't real. And here he is, Jesus revealing himself, giving power to do the one thing that I had no ability to do, bringing healing to the one area that I had no ability to bring healing to. Mercy and forgiveness. And I have to tell you, I was just overcome that day.
We're talking to Cam Underdown, a modern day Saul of Tarsus. When we come back, we're going to talk about the plan that God had for this atheist. And I'm Jack Russell, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Russell. We're with Cameron Underdown. If you want to learn more, www.zeraministries.org. Zeraministries.org. All right, you're an atheist. God had other plans for you. Cam, what happened?
Well, that day that I came to know who Jesus was, I didn't know what to do, so I just picked up my phone. And I started calling all these people who had shared with me about who Christ was and some friends that didn't know Christ and even family members. And I said, hey, I just had this completely profound experience. I don't know what to do with it. I think I'm a Christian now. What do? I need some help. And I have to say, picking up the phone and calling people and telling them about Jesus started that day, April 27th, 2007. It really hasn't stopped. That's just how life has transpired. I was a burgeoning software developer, wanted to own my own business. 2008, I have this opportunity that presents itself to take on an internship during my senior year at Oakland to work with Kensington Church in the same ministry that had been reaching out to me. And so I took it. It was a tremendous year. For the next 5 years, I would spend time doing college and high school ministry through Kensington. So many incredible memories, so many incredible testimonies, being able to baptize people for the first time. I was so moved, though, with compassion toward people that didn't believe, and especially that college age, right? I have to say, that most people I meet, when they're thinking about ministry and who they're ministering to, or they have a heart for somebody, oftentimes it's the people who they were like when Jesus met them. And so I wanted to go find those 19-year-old atheists. I wanted to go find them. Not only did I want to go find those 19-year-old atheists, I believe the Lord put this passion on my heart to go take it right back to Oakland University where it started.
Which you did.
Yeah.
All right. Kensington Church, Troy, co-founded by Steve Andrews.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you brought this up.
All right. And he, his oldest daughter, Lindy.
This is true, Jack. That's my wife. I went from...
Whoa. You're an atheist, a fervent atheist, and here you got the co-founder of Kensington, and you're going to ask him, I think, in 2009, for his oldest daughter's hand?
Yeah, things progressed pretty quick for me.
Now, you got chutzpah.
I have to say, the Andrews, Steve and Paula, they knew me before Lindy ever even did, right? So one of the main places for outreach and where these Christians would hang out and bring people like me was back to the Andrews house. So when I was 19, 20 years old, that's where we'd all hang out. They were right across the street from the university, and they were always so kind and hospitable. When their eldest daughter, let me add one thing. I really didn't understand that he was the lead pastor of Kensington. I didn't know what that meant or what it would entail. All I knew was that I would most Fridays be cooking food for the whole crew of the college students. And one particular day around the new year, their eldest daughter moved home from Wheaton College. So the more I got to know her, the more I became interested in her. And yes, in 2009, as we'd been dating for, you know, pretty close to a year, I remember sitting down with Steve and said, hey, look, Lindy and I have been talking. We're interested in getting married. I'm working at the church. I'm doing this internship. I don't really have any job prospects or financial prospects, but she just got a teaching job, and she said she can take care of us while we figure it out. What do you think, Steve? was my actual pitch. So let's put for sure. And he met me with a beautiful phrase that said, calling before provision. I believe you guys are called to be together, and I believe the Lord will provide. So that was a wonderful and gracious response. But yes, in the span of 3 years, I went from devoted and dedicated atheist to marrying the eldest daughter of Kensington Church's lead pastor. So,
all right. Lindy and you now have four children.
We do.
Okay. The youngest, born in 2023, Haley.
Yeah. So, now, her full name is Helen. Okay, we have her little nickname, and she has it's gonna be a little tough to talk about sometimes, but she has a rare genetic condition called Wiedemann-Steiner syndrome. We found this out when she was about a little over a year. The pregnancy, her young life in that first year was just very different than our other children, a lot of different characterizations. But talk about a life-changing experience. We found out that, you know, there's a very good chance that she'll live with us for the rest of our lives, her life. We're very grateful that it's not degenerative. That's just delays. But there are definitely some challenges that will follow her for her life. And so... And, you know, for those who are listening out there, too, I mean, in terms of our own marriage, in terms of our own journey, it's been really challenging, and yet it's been so beautiful at the same time.
It's a genetic condition caused by a mutation on the 11th chromosome.
Yes.
All right. When we had breakfast.
Yes.
A while ago. I quote you, Jack, we needed her.
Yeah. Well, I want to link it back to two things that I've gotten to share, right? Number one, and I just had this conversation with my 12, almost 13-year-old about the abortion that I'd had. Number one, anytime we get to behold one of these children in our lives, it is extraordinarily redemptive. It is a tremendous reminder of the Lord's mercy and forgiveness. And Hallie is really, really special in different ways because in all the different things that I've wanted to be involved in, all the high pace activity in different ministries and different churches, you know, that we've helped to be a part of and start. Sometimes you can get lost. I've gotten lost in that. Sometimes I've gotten unfocused on my family. Sometimes I've missed them in the pursuit of this opportunity or that opportunity or this exciting idea. And when Hallie was born, she, and when we found out about the diagnosis, especially, it focused us. Focused me to say, okay, what's really important? That focus for me, I think, has been a tremendous gift. It's really helped me remember who I'm called to be first, right? Yes, I'm a son of God first, but then I'm the husband to Lindy and the father to my children next. And again, with my story and the desire that I have for people to know Jesus, even in the ministry realm, even doing great things that, you know, or exciting things for Christ, I can get that out of order. And Hallie has really helped, I think, in certain ways to help reorder those priorities and things I'm working on right now.
Whenever I've had a guest with a special needs child, they say that eventually they've come to realize that's an angel, a gift from God, a hero, a teacher for our whole family.
Yes.
That don't make no sense.
But it's so true. I echo that. I see the compassion that is growing in my three oldest children. My eldest daughter, my son, they love to see her. She loves to see them. She lives to see her siblings. And my third born, Janie and Hallie, have this really beautiful and special relationship. It's Marguerite, CK, Janie, and Hallie. And Janie and Hallie have this just deep, deep bond as these two younger sisters that we just cherish.
We're talking to Cam Underdown. When we come back, we're going to ask him about another phenomenal day in his life, June 16th, 2019. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisullo.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohon. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Cam Underdown. If you want to learn more, www.zeraministries.org. June 16th, 2019.
Another one of those days that is completely unforgettable. Jack, that's the day I baptized my mom. My mom and I, it was a complex relationship growing up. She cared for us. She did so much of what she could. And yet with the different things in her life that that pulled her away from God, from Christ, from even any sort of mercy for herself, she had turned to alcohol. And so there were lots of days I didn't know what mom I was going to get. And one of the best days ever, though, was in 2015 when she finally confessed who Jesus was and entered rehab and started a journey of healing and recovery. And then, as you said, June 16, 2019 was the day where she publicly declared that, not only to our church and to her friends and family, but I even had the privilege of baptizing her. You want to talk about anything is possible? I never thought that would happen ever. Okay, I didn't have belief for that. But again, Jesus does. He had belief for me when I didn't.
In 1959, some members of the Church of Christ started a little private Christian college in Rochester Hills, today known as Rochester Christian University.
Yes.
And since 2025, you've been a campus minister at RCU.
Yes.
Tell us about that ministry.
Sure. So it's through our partnership that with Zera Ministries and Rochester Christian University share a partnership. And it's through that partnership that I get to minister. With Zera, our entire mission is to help grow new generations of Christian leaders, right? We want to help grow people up in the faith and their character, their doctrine, their ministry skills, send them out to wherever God's calling them. And this partnership with RCU has just been phenomenal. There are so many young people there who are being trained up in college. They're looking at business and nursing and education, you name it, great degree programs. And what we get to come in and do is try to fan into flame the idea of, okay, while I may be vocationally a teacher or a nurse or a business person, or maybe even as a pastor, how am I going forth and making disciples? How am I living out the Great Commission? Who am I praying for? Who am I walking with and sharing my life in Christ with until they're ready to be baptized, until they're ready to profess their faith publicly? And not only that, how am I walking with that person until they do the same for somebody else? That's the beauty of the Great Commission. And we call it building Great Commission Christians, right? People who literally believe that. If you're not familiar with the Great Commission, it's Jesus's almost his final words to his disciples before he ascends, right? He's died. He's been resurrected. We just celebrated Easter, right? There's lots of talk about Jesus raising from the dead. There he is. He's resurrected. He's resurrected in bodily form. He's appeared to his disciples, which is a story that I absolutely love. The stories where he appears to his disciples, and I'd love to share just a second on that in a moment. But he's there, and before he ascends to the Father, before he ascends to heaven, he says to his followers, he says, "Go, or as you are going, make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them everything that I've commanded with you. And surely I'll be with you to the very end of the age." Well, that's an invitation for all of us. At least that's what I believe. And for so many Christ followers, they don't see themselves in that. And to be able to be at RCU and in a position, even at a Christian university, to be able to share, hey, guys, gals, there's a great opportunity for you all throughout your life, all around you. And there's nothing more joyful than making disciples.
There's a listener that says, "Cam, I admire you, if I'm truthful, I'm like that apostle named Thomas, Doubting Thomas.
Yeah, well, we'd have some things in common, wouldn't we? Thomas is probably the biblical character, and they say a modern-day Saul of Tarsus. And yes, have I gone from atheist to unapologetic evangelist and church planter, ministry launcher, campus minister? Absolutely. But Thomas, he and I share a special distinction, I believe, insofar as Thomas, during that time in life, because we're in the season right now, in the season after the resurrection leading up to Pentecost, where we can actually look at these scriptures and realize we're in that time. Thomas did not believe that Jesus had been resurrected. So as he gets the news, what does he say? I will not believe that he has done this unless I put my fingers in the holes of his hands and my hand in his side. And so one day as the disciples are gathered, what happens? Jesus shows up, he pops through the locked door, and he says, Thomas, come here. Put your fingers in the holes in my hands. Put your hand in my side. A mercy extended. And for those people that say, I just don't believe, you can ask Jesus even that. And he can show up in the room, that locked room, like he did for Thomas, and he can show up in the locked room like he did for me.
As our time winds down together, a closing prayer, please.
Yes. Jesus, for anyone who is listening, for anyone, again, who feels too far away, for anyone who doubts, like me, let them ask you what it is, what it would take. Let them be honest with you and just say it in the private space of their heart, to say, this is what it would take for me to profess you, Jesus. This is what it would take for me to be baptized, just so that they can know it. And Jesus, we thank you for this time to be together. Lead and guide all of us into your purposes and plans and your will. We love you. Amen.
Cameron Underdown, you are a shining example that with God, anything is possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.